My name is Laurie. I'm a compulsive overeater. We're dealing with steps 10 and 11, but I do want to say someone came up to me and said, well, wait a minute, are you saying we should not be making amends for long past things that we've done? And I didn't mean to leave that impression. I'm very glad that question was asked of me. I think that in matters of the heart, where girlfriends, ex-girlfriends or ex-boyfriends are involved 30, 20, 40 years ago, I think there's a real danger in suddenly coming back into people's lives and saying, remember that. That doesn't mean that if I stole from the corner store 40, 50 years ago, I wouldn't try to make an amend. I would. That's a very different issue, because I don't think it would harm anyone to go back to them and say, I owe you money. But I think it might harm someone to remind them of hurt that they felt at my expense. That's my own feeling. But I always discuss this with people, with my sponsors. I will always ask their opinion as to whether I'm just avoiding it or whether I have some reason to it. And as I said, I had a bad experience once where my sponsor said, just write to this person and say this. And I got a response that was just hurt and angry. And yeah, it wasn't my fault. I did my best, but I didn't even want to cause even that much harm. And so I'm very careful in the heart affairs, but I'm not. I will. I mean, anyone that I could easily apologize to or repay without and knowing that I wouldn't harm that person, I would do that, even if it happened 50 years ago. Okay. The process that we've been discussing leads us to these promises in step 9. Halfway through step 9, the promises. After step 9, they're called the hidden promises, which are what I came to OA for. OA promises us something different from any diet program in the world, because it promises us release. It's not, I want it, but I can't have it. Or, as more often is the case, I want it, but I can't have it now, but I can have it later. It's, I don't want it. That's the promise of this program. And if OA hasn't given that to you, then you haven't given yourself to OA, to the 12 steps, because that is the experience of every one of us who have worked this 12 steps the best of our ability and have found that release. So the responsibility is not mine but yours. And I'll talk about that more in step 12. But it is these steps. And step 9 gets us there. It doesn't keep us there. If only it could keep us there. But the Big Book has 3 more steps that keep us there. And these are the steps, the maintenance steps and the growth steps, that I have to continue to do every single day of my life. And if I don't, I'm in danger. And when I don't, I am in danger. I have been in danger. When I haven't, I have been in danger. I'll talk about that. If you remember, I read these hidden promises. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. And the last sentence of that paragraph on page 85 says, that is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. The trustee from Region 8, a friend of mine, says, I'm Charles, I'm recovered but not cured. And he's right. I'm recovered but not cured. What we really have is a daily reprieve. Now, a reprieve, if you look on the dictionary, I was told this and it's true. Reprieve is a suspension of a death sentence. So we have a daily suspension of our death sentence, contingent, conditional on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. What are the 3 things that I have to do? Well, the first of the 3 is step 10. And it's something that I had no idea about and was one of the reasons for my relapse for 6 or 7 years. I finally found the answer to my relapse. 2 things. One is I was going back to eating those foods that I knew I couldn't be eating that caused me cravings. But even putting that aside, I was relapsing because I did not understand step 10, at least from a Big Book perspective. Now, in the Big Book, in the 12 steps, the 12 steps for step 10 says continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. And after I had recovered, after about 4 or 5 months of the program, I had recovered. I'd reached the spiritual awakening. I'd done my step fours, my fives, my amends. I was floating. I was great. I'd lost a lot of weight. I was just feeling great. 6 months more pass. I'm still feeling great. I'm talking and people are listening and I've read the literature and I'm really good, you know, and feeling great. And things were basically, had been pretty good in that year. And then things began to get very, very difficult for my family, my wife's family especially, illnesses, deaths, really difficult, people I love very much. And we coped with them, and I coped with them, and I did what had to be done, and we did, you know, we generally as a family lived with that. But I found myself yelling at my kids for doing nothing very special. They were young, but I found myself yelling at them, getting testy with people. And step 10 says, continue to take inventory, personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. So I'd say to the kids, I'm sorry I yelled at you. I admitted it. I'm sorry I was testy with you. In other words, I apologize for my behavior, but I wasn't taking inventory. I didn't know what it meant to take inventory because I hadn't realized that from the big book perspective, what an inventory is identifying and being rid of the things which are blocking us off from the sunlight of the spirit. And I can show you that if on page 84 is the discussion of step 10. It's one paragraph long. It's something that the AAers did all the time, but wasn't in the steps because when they were together, they always did inventory with each other. It was part of their way of life. But Bill knew that it was important to put it in because this was for people who had no AA around them. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Isn't that a difference? Continue to set right any new mistakes as opposed to and admitted it. I think there's a big difference there. This is more the restitution area. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. That is what we did with step 4 through 9, is cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Pretty close to the words that were used in step 4, right? Not exactly the same, but the key issues are there. Self-seeking is left out, but resentment, selfishness, and dishonesty, and fear are there. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. That's step 6. Step 6 and 7, we discuss them with someone immediately, step 5, and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone, steps 8 and 9. So what I discovered about step 10 is that I have to do the complete process over again, 4 through 9 over again. But it's not 4 through 9. I've already done 4 through 9, and after 9 I had my recovery. It's a 10. But I use the same 4 through 9 process for doing it. But I've already recovered. It keeps me recovered. It keeps me in spiritual progress. I can't tell you how much this has saved my life because I do step 10s all the time when I need to. I've developed a list of 12 reasons, 12 check marks as to why I should, when I should do a step 10. I won't bore you with them. They're in that oabigbook.info website. But I can tell you some of the major ones. One is if I'm restless. Another is if I'm irritable. Another if I'm discontented. The restless, irritable, and discontented are phrases that are used in the doctor's opinion that always are signals to me it's time for me to do a step 10. Another is if my gray areas are getting grayer in my plan of eating, if my weight is going up, if my eating is becoming a little bit more obsessive. Even if I haven't broken my plan of eating, is it getting sloppy? Are things happening? Time to do a step 10. Because when that happens, I went through the others. I've already been very restless, irritable, and discontented for a very long time. So when I do that, and I take out my resentment forms, and I fill them out, and I write down my resentments, it's amazing how many I find. Some of them are deep, and some of them are not so deep, but it's amazing what I find. I also use this, when I'm restless, it's often a wish to be doing something else, right? You want to be doing something. I've used this to make life decisions and career decisions. whether I'm going to take on a new job or try a new area of the law or something like that. I've used it as a decision-making process for almost everything, anything I've ever had to do. And it's never failed me. Because once I go through that process, I'm eliminating the bad motives and only looking at the good ones, thinking of unselfishly, honestly, without self-seeking and without fear at what the options are for the benefit of not myself, but of others. Because that's what I'm looking for. So that whole approach, it seems to me, well, my experience is, works beautifully. There are times when I haven't done a step 10 for 6 months, and there are times when I did them every week. It just depends on what was going on in my life. I was telling some people, there was a time when my mother was very ill. My mother and I had a wonderful, wonderful relationship, and she was ill. And she was becoming a real, real difficult burden on my father, who was elderly and was trying to take care of her by himself. And they loved each other tremendously. I mean, just it was a very loving relationship. And I was pretty testy at that time. You know, I mean, things were going on, and I was. But when I did my step, so I did my step 10s almost every week. I would do a step 10, and my mother, my father, and their relationship would be on it. Because I was always worried about the relationship. Would he get tired of taking care of her? Would she get tired of him always waiting on her? What would happen? Would they fall out of love with each other? Was this the end of their relationship? These were my fears, my resentments. So I would do it quite often. When life is going relatively well, I don't find myself doing it that often. Sometimes I should be doing it much more often than I do. And that's what happened to me over this summer. It was a very busy summer. My daughter got married in our backyard. We had all kinds of things we had to do. And I just said, I'm in limbo. I'm just not doing it, you know, and I didn't do much. I also didn't, I did some sponsoring, but not much. And I went to meetings as much as I could, but I had to miss some meetings because I was busy with the wedding plans and all that. Well, you know, it had an effect on me. And I gained some weight, and then I did my step 10. I figured out what I had to do, and I'm losing weight now. But that's what I use step 10s for. And I can't tell you how that saved me. You know, I always say to someone who says, I've been relapsing, what's wrong? What should I do? I say, there are only, in the 12-step program, there are only two reasons for relapse. It's either the allergy of the body or the obsession of the mind. If it's the allergy of the body, you might be ingesting something that you shouldn't be ingesting. You might have a plan of eating that hasn't eliminated things that you should be eliminating so that your body is telling you more. Or else, there's something in the steps you haven't done because your mind keeps giving you permission. You're not sane anymore. Those are the only two possible causes for a relapse in terms of this problem, the way the big book sets out the problem as being the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. What I say to all my sponsees, and when they follow my advice, after step 9, they prosper, and when they don't follow my advice, they don't, is listen to me carefully. And I say this so seriously. You gotta continue to do step 10s. If you don't start dealing with the things that are bothering you, more things are gonna come out of you. You're just starting, you're floating high now, but there are things that are gonna happen. You've gotta deal with them. If you're restless, you're irritable, you're discontented, the food becomes more of an issue, start doing another. Write down the resentments. Call me up. We'll do a step 5. We'll do it quickly. You'll get rid of it. When they do that, they prosper. And some of them haven't, and they've just let things build up in them. And then they relapse. Because you can get pretty high doing the step 9. You're floating. You're just floating. But boy, if you don't continue to keep yourself grounded, then I think you're in trouble. So step 10 for me has been my lifesaver. And I realized it took, you know, I went through my history of relapse is basically steps 4 through 9, recovery, feeling great, relapse. Steps 4 through 9, feeling recovery, feeling great, relapse. And I was sponsoring galore. Even in my illness, I was sponsoring. I was active in service. I had 5 meditation books. I was doing 11 and 12, you know. I was doing all these things. And I was apologizing when I screwed up. But I was not examining what was going on in my life and dealing with my resentments, my fears, and my sex conduct issues. And so step 10, I can't emphasize that enough. But I will. I'll stop emphasizing it because I'm going to go on to step 11. Now, in step 11, from the big book perspective, the word mediation, so it's sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Nice words. We understand meditation a lot differently from the way Bill Wilson understood it in 1939. Meditation to him was a very specific practice, and it was a practice that he discusses in the big book. And I do not call down what we talk about meditation today. I've done it, and it's very valuable and wonderful. And I have friends of mine who spend an hour every morning doing their morning meditations, and they meditate. They sit in a very relaxed position. They meditate on candles, or they put their mind out there. And I'm telling you, they're more serene than I am, and they live a wonderful life. So I do not call that down. But the big book sets out the minimum that should be done. And it is very practical. It is not otherworldly. And if you look at page 85, it says, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we've begun to sense the flow of his spirit in us, into us. To some extent, we've become God conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action. Big Book doesn't let us rest at all. So we have to go further than that. And I just wanted to give this image. If, in fact, we've taken away the blockage between our hearts and our minds, the things that are deep within us and our minds, so that there's a pretty clear passageway, then we're able to act more instinctively than not. Now, we've had to go through a lot of work figuring out how to act instinctively. We've had to do all these inventory and sharing and making amends. It's taken a while to learn how to act instinctively, but we've got this beginning. Now can we do it even more so? I just want to give you an example. I'm the kind of person, like I did a favor for a couple in a time of their need, and they sent me flowers at my office. It was a legal thing. And I spent 15 minutes trying to decide whether I should phone them to thank them for thanking me with flowers. Well, if I thank them, are they going to thank me? And is this going to, you know, I didn't know what to do. And I finally decided to phone them and thank them. They said, well, you're welcome. You know, we just wanted to thank you. So that was it. I came home, I told my wife, and she said, well, of course you thank people who send you flowers, right? She's in tune, right? For me, I had to work it through to come up with the obvious. It's a true story. There's a professor of mathematics. He's retired. He may be dead now, but he's certainly retired at the University of Manitoba, where I live, who put a huge equation onto a bulletin board in front of the class. Huge, long, long mathematical, complicated equation. He said, from this, it's perfectly. He looks at it. He says, you know what? I'll be right back. And he goes away. He comes back a half an hour later, and he says, I was right. It's obvious. Took him a half an hour to figure out how obvious it was. I want to live a life more in intuition. I want to be able to have someone looking at me, as my wife did in the bed in the morning, and have come out of my mouth exactly the right words. And that's what they're suggesting we have to strive for. And that's what step 11 will give us. If we're clear, if we can clear our minds up of the past and then work on step 11 for living our life on a day-to-day basis, we can have that intuition more and more. That's the promise of this program, of step 11. So they say on page 86, it would be easy to be, right at the top, it would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. There are three different prayers and meditation moments. One is at night, one is in the morning, and the other is all through the day. Okay? But they don't take very long. The one at night can take 5 minutes. The one in the beginning of the day can take 5 minutes. The one during the day, only if you're agitated or doubtful, do you have to spend any time doing this. And each one of them is dedicated to the concept of how to figure out how to be more useful to others. It's very practical, and it's not the kind of meditation that we often do. That I originally was doing. It's not reading the meditation books and thinking about things. It's actually planning. At night, we review the day that just passed. And we ask ourselves, Where had we been resentful, selfish, dishonest, or frightened? We do, in our heads, we do a little mini inventory. And that's on page 86. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? If the answer is yes, then we do it. You know, so we're doing a little mini inventory. Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. In other words, we're reviewing our day past in order to figure out what we could have done better. We're figuring out what are the mistakes we made, and can we do a better job tomorrow? That's the purpose of it. It's not to figure out what's deeply going on in our hearts. I think step 10 is more for that. It's something that's done in our head, but we're figuring out very practically by figuring out what we did in the past, what we can do better in the future. That's step 11 at night. Not a big deal. There's a little prayer there. After making a review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And people have often said to me, well, isn't that step 10 in miniature? My answer is yes, it is, and yes, it is, and no, it isn't. And I'm no expert on this because I know lots of people, including Blaine, who developed the forms, who believes that this is step 10. My answer is this. Take the example of my mother when she was quite ill. Every day I might review my actions towards my mother and my father and ask whether I was loving enough to them, giving enough to them, how did I treat them in a conversation on the phone. I might review what I did that day. But every so often, I needed an overview about their whole relationship and my whole relationship to them, and that's what happened when I did my step 10s once a week. There's a big difference between putting my mother down in the resentment column and then figuring out why she was on the resentment list and then figuring out how that affected me and then figuring out where I had been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened from just sort of saying, how did I do today in relation to my mother? So for me, step 10 is just a deeper version of this, and it's not something I can do every day. I know some people who do it every day, and if they can do that every day, God bless them. Although I wonder whether they missed an overview, whether if they let it pile up for a little while, they might not see more. I don't know the answer to that. So that's a step 11 evening meditation. Or if you're on shift work, it's the morning meditation, depending on when you go to sleep. On awakening, we think about the 24 hours ahead. And we consider our plans for the day. And there's a prayer to be said. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed in a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. So we plan our day. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for, in another prayer, an inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax, take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. So that's a real promise, and it's a promise that certainly has been true for me, although obviously with this example of the friend sending me the flowers, it hasn't always been true for me. But more and more, I think I'm acting a bit more intuitively. So I plan for the day. If I have indecision, if I don't know what to do in my plans, I ask God for directions. And you may say to me, if you're religious, how can you ask a being that doesn't exist to you for directions? And I can only say, I ask to go into the direction of truth, love, justice, and beauty instead of Laurie's way. Simple as that. Those are my motives. I want to be truthful and loving and honest and have a sense of beauty around me. And I want to follow that path. And when I pray like that, it makes some sense to me. It may make no sense to you, but it makes a lot of sense to me. It's my God. It's not yours. And you have your own God and whatever makes sense to you. I have had, I mean, as a lawyer, you know, I was a litigation lawyer for many years and involved cross-examination. And when I first started, before I joined this program, even after I joined the program for a while, you know, I'd do a cross-examination. I would plan my ass off. I'd work hard and I'd figure out what's exactly the right question, the first question to ask. And if he says this, I'll do this. And full of it, you know. And when I really understood this, I began to rely much more on my intuition. I would work hard, I'd prepare, But I would then, I'd go to sleep or I'd get up in the morning and I'd say, whatever the question that pops up in my mind will be the right question. And it always was. Not because God gave me the right direction, the right question. Maybe. Maybe you think he did. But all I can say is, well, the way I look at it is that I had 20 right questions available to me, and I chose one of them that was appropriate, and I asked it in a way that was calm, clear, and that really got to the heart of something. Or if it didn't, the next question would, because I was open and flexible and trusting, and my mind was concentrated completely on what my job was, and not on looking good, and not on winning. I wanted justice to prevail. I didn't want to win. You know, and there's a big difference between that. Because winning is ego, but justice prevailing is what I believe in. So I found this to be tremendously valuable. They have other, say that we conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we'd be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we'd be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. So I have every right to say I ask to be a good conduit of the big book message of recovery for others. Not so I'll look good, but so I can be a good conduit, a good messenger of the thing. I can ask that justice be done. I can ask that I win. And if I focus on my core values and not on what I want, life will go better for us. They talk about memorizing some prayers, and I have memorized some prayers, and that's it. And how long can that take? 5 minutes, maybe 10. But that's the minimum the big book suggests. So we look at the past to review our past. We look at the future to plan our future. And then during the day, if agitated or doubtful, page 87, we ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. And those are mantras, you know. They're just like, remember, you used to buy from some people used to be able to buy a mantra to say that would get you, you know, what's a mantra? It's a repetitive prayer. And there have been times when I've said, thy will not mine be done. 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 Until finally, ha, thy will not mine be done. I'm no longer running the show. I'm no longer running the show. I'm no longer running the show. God, please give me the right thought or action. And I relax. And it's helped me. I mean, that's all I can say. And that's just momentarily. So the prayer meditation that the big book talks about is really quite different from the prayer meditation that I thought I had to do. And that I did, I wouldn't say religiously, but I did quite a bit of. And it didn't seem to help me very much. Because I wasn't doing the practical stuff, and the big book talks about the practical stuff. I have a few minutes, so I wanted to review a few things, if that's okay with you. When I get to step 12, which will be after the break, I'm going to talk on step 12 in this session much more about what the big book's directions for carrying the message are and its toughness. When I talk about step 12 tomorrow morning at the keynote, I'm not going to talk big book as much. I'm just going to talk, generally speaking, about OA and how we carry the message in general. Okay, and I'm doing my best to separate the big book aspect from sort of the keynote aspect. But I've dealt with 10 and 11. I'd like to go back a bit and because I don't think I discussed step 9. I didn't point out one thing about step 9. Nowhere in the big book is there the concept of making amends to myself. And it's all making amends to others. It's all helping others. And I wanted to discuss that for a moment because I know how important it is for some people to be able to say words like, I have to take care of myself. I have to learn how to say no. I have to take time for myself because everyone is pulling me every which way. And I don't question that. That's true. What I think the big book's approach would be to that issue is, why do you have to take time for yourself? Why do you have to learn to say no? And in the end, if you work the steps 4 through 9 the big book way, I think you'll discover that you have to do that in order to help other people and not to harm them. If people are dependent upon you for things that they could be doing themselves, aren't you harming them by doing it to them? doing it for them? If people pull you every which way and allow you to be pulled, aren't they harming themselves by allowing you to be pulled? So if you look at their good and do something for their good, and if you're running yourself ragged, how much of a messenger can you be if you can't stand up and you're too tired and you're cranky and all that? So you do have to have your alone time, and you do have to revitalize yourself. But it's not so you can be revitalized to feel good. It's so you can be revitalized so you can be a better carrier of the message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. And I'd forgotten to say that. I think it's an important thing to say. I also wanted to say that the Big Book has a lot of things about it. I'm just taking some time. I hope that's okay just to pick up on this before I deal with step 12. Because 10, 11 took... What's wrong with being? What's wrong with doing it for yourself? Because the Big Book is outer directed. We are dangerous being in ourselves. We have to help others. If we don't help others, we will die. It's as simple as that. That's the prescription of the Big Book. Our life has to be dedicated to be of maximum usefulness to other people. And the more we dwell on our own good, the more we will go back to compulsive eating. That's been my experience, and certainly that's what the book says. So the more we think about, we often do the same things that we ought to do, but we do it for the sake of others and not for ourselves. Okay, that's how I read the Big Book. I could be wrong, but that's how I read it. I've developed a series of provocations, provocative statements that I think are reflected in the Big Book. I have 12 of them, but I don't have the list here with me, so I might not have all of them. But one of them that the Big Book stands for is, I am a recovered and not recovering compulsive eater. I've already, I think, talked to you about that a lot. But I can tell you that if you look at the Big Book, you will find the word recovering used only once. And that's in the chapter, either to the wives or the family afterwards, discussing a person who's just started the steps. But when they talk about themselves, they talk about themselves as recovered. The title page, Alcoholics Anonymous, a story how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. We have recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. And the reason for recovered rather than recovering, it sounds like it's prideful, but it's not. It's basically a statement of what has happened to me. I talked about that, I think, yesterday, so I won't go much more into that. Secondly is that, I don't know, I don't have all the numbers, but the steps can take, you can get to and to recovery relatively quickly. And you don't have to wait for a year before you do your step 4, or you don't have to wait until you're really, 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 really ready for step 6. You don't have to wait until God hits you in the head in step 3. You don't have to wait until God removes your defects of character in step 7. The Big Book's approach is a program of action and not of waiting. So just do it. Pardon me? Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you were making some secret signal to me. Okay. I've already talked about that absence is not the most important thing in my life without exception. The consciousness of the presence of God is, because that's what the Big Book says in the chapter We Agnostics, and because as long as I'm conscious of the presence of God, I'm sane. As long as I'm sane, I don't eat things that are going to bother me, that I'm going to create cravings. And I don't concentrate on not eating the things that create cravings. I concentrate on being sane. Because as long as I'm sane, I won't eat them. So it's much more important for me to be sane than it is to me to be worried about my abstinence. I don't worry about my abstinence. I'm not in charge of my abstinence. My mind is in charge of my abstinence. And my mind, if it's attuned to my higher power, will be abstinent, will allow me to be abstinent. So that's another really provocative statement, but I think it's straight from, I know it's straight from the Big Book because it's in that chapter. I talked about how some of the steps aren't that important in the Big Book or aren't that time, they're all important, but they're not of equal emphasis and you don't spend as much time on some as you do on others. I talked about that already. I'm trying to remember all my provocations. You don't need sponsors. That's right. Although sponsors are really important, you don't need them. And I say that not because you should reject sponsors. You should not. If you have sponsors available to you, get them. But this book was written for people who didn't have sponsors available to them. And so it's your responsibility if you're not recovered. It's not, I can't find the right sponsor. You know, it's not that. It's your responsibility. The directions are here, and you can follow them. And it's up to you. And if there are two of you in a meeting, and there's only two people in a meeting, and neither of you has recovered, big deal. I recovered using this method by sponsoring a guy who asked me to sponsor him. He was from AA. I'd been in AA for 15 years. I've been in OA for 6 years or 7 years. I said, what can I teach you? He said, well, I said, you've been sober much longer than I've been absent. I've only been absent for a little while now because this is after my relapse, right? How do you sponsor? He said, well, I read the big book. I said, oh, good. I read the big book too. No. I said, I read the big book. I said, well, I read the big book too. You should see my copy of it. I have it underlined in black and in red, and I have yellow marker on it. And no, he says, I read the big book. And then he explained that he was part of, in AA, he was sort of a follower of Joe and Charlie, the great speakers, and how he read the big book as a set of directions. That I had never done. I had not really done that. So we sponsored each other. Neither of us had really recovered, but we helped each other. We read the big book, and we figured out, and we followed the directions as an OA. I was able to bring a lot to that because of my experience with food, able to work with him about plan of eating, and I finally accepted that moment when we read the doctor's opinion. I finally accepted the notion of the allergy of the body. I had rejected that for years. Finally accepted the notion that my body was sick and that I could not eat certain foods. Once I accepted that, it was not hard for me to work through the rest of the program because I realized that was one of the main reasons I had relapsed. So two people, neither of them recovered, can still recover without a recovered sponsor if they just sort of say, let's help each other through this. I don't remember many of the others, but one of them I'll talk more about probably tomorrow, and that is that, it's basically we have to be tougher than we are. And I'll talk about that in the context of the big book later on, but I won't talk about that right now. So I'm not going to go through any more provocations. I'm going to end a little early, if that's okay with you, because I don't want to just take up time. I'm sure there's a lot I could have said and didn't say, but we finished step 11. We're at the moment where we're now ready. We're attuned now. Step 10 is going to keep us. Dr. Bob said, the prescription, have you ever seen there's a prescription pad with his name on it, and it says, prescription for alcoholics, clean house, trust God, help others. Well, keep clean house is step 10. Trust God is step 11. And if we don't help others, we're still going to die, even if we do all the other things. So that's 10, 11, and 12, and I want to talk about step 12 from the Big Book perspective when we meet again. Oh, this time in about 15 minutes. Thanks.
I do 15-hour big book studies. I don't do 5-hour.
Yeah, yes.